So why not own that space? Why not be a person who manages your own fate? It's so impressive and so important.
Welcome to the Private Chef Podcast, serving the 1%. I'm your host, Hannes Henchy. And on our show, we speak to the best chefs, how they honed in on their skills to excel in the industry, and what it takes to work as a private chef for some of the most exclusive clients in the world. Welcome back to the Private Chef Podcast. I'm your host, Hannes Henchy. I'm excited to welcome back attorney Michael Wildes to the show today. Michael serves as the managing partner at Wildes & Weinberg, a prominent immigration law firm based in the U.S. Notably among his clients is Chef Sean George. In our previous episode, episode 80, Michael talked about immigration laws and visa options for private chefs. Today marks the second part of our discussion where we'll discuss the path and processes involved in getting a green card. Michael, thank you once again for joining us. So basically, welcome back to round two. Last time we spoke about HELO, the H visa, E visa, L visa, and O visa. And today we're going to dive into the green card. So welcome back to the show, Michael.
My pleasure. I shaved since the last time I saw you. So if you're... viewership don't recognize me, it's not the younger brother, it's the same person. Anyway, lovely to be back here, Hannes. Big fan of you and what you do for the community.
Nice, thank you so much for the kind words. Let's dive right in. Where can chefs make a dent on their journey towards a green card? What would that process look like for somebody who is a professional chef?
So if you had a good experience listening to the first podcast where we reviewed those landmark visas, the H, the E, the L, and the O, you now have yourself a visa that portends a dual intent. And it's wonderful because then you have no problem when you decide to apply for a green card, traveling in and out of America. Even custom officers and immigration agents can't stop you once they look on the system and they see that you applied for a green card, because most of those visas in some fashion allow a temporary person to apply for a green card and their spouse too. Although the E is not 100% and you have to be very careful to get good solid advice, but if your journey from day one is to eventually live permanently or have the ability to get a green card, it's very important that you understand that you apply maybe for your extension of your work visa and then apply for the green card so they don't collide if they have different intentionalities. And it's very important for you to understand first, what is a green card? A green card is permanent residence in the United States. It allows you to stay and work for anybody. You don't have to worry about anything. In fact, the next step is the Golden Grail. 5 years after getting a green card, or if you're married to an American citizen, 3 years, you can apply for citizenship. Then, God forbid, in case you're involved in something and there's an allegation or some criminality that you stepped into purposefully or inadvertently, you can never be deported from the United States. So I just want you to understand, although the green card is coveted and it allows you to work for anybody and to be here, you can still be deported from the United States and you're not protected until you're a citizen. I would also caution your viewership to actually get good tax advice, because you might be better off getting for citizenship. It may be the same thing. And the rules generally are, once you have a green card for about 8 years, there could be an exit tax when you give up your green card. So you kind of want to make sure that you have right advice. And my thoughts are always to make sure that a tax advisor and counsel gives you a writing so that you can anticipate what you did years later and know why you did or didn't take certain actions. So many people come to me with challenges and they wish they had applied for citizenship. Now they're facing a legal challenge and they don't know why. They had old advice and they didn't heed the modernization of both the immigration and the tax codes and everything. So be very careful and understand the value of a green card in your life with a good consultation with an immigration lawyer. Of course, I'll always make myself available. So you can get a green card. Like I said, in the temporary visas, generally there are three ways of getting visas. It's the same matrix, if you would, for permanent residents. Honest, you can get a green card either based on a relationship to somebody, based on employment, or based on investment.
In terms of kind of the investment, there's different amounts based on where you invest, right? Like there are certain areas called opportunity zones where the investment is lower than whether you go to a metropolitan area like New York City, for example.
Well, let's talk about this again. So those landmark visas that we talked about for the H, the E, the L, and the O kind of took the stage when it came to the temporary visa. Let's look at the investment basis to apply for a green card. That's the EB-5. We have five employment bases to get green cards, the EB-1, EB-2, EB-3, 4, and 5. I'm going to start now with the EB-5 because you brought up the investment. The EB-5 is something very important. I want you to know, I think it was in 1990, my father, rest his soul, who just passed away a few months ago as of the recording of this podcast, testified on Capitol Hill because there was a lot of pushback when it came on the books. And it still remained on the books. There's a tremendous amount of fraud in that space. It'll scare the hell out of you when you look in Google. And I'm going to tell you right now something that we're generally not allowed to tell our clients. We've never lost one of these. We had one arms dealer who put money into an investment, decided to get his money out, and withdrew himself from the program. So I suppose that's not a loss. He just retreated. Sadly, he was killed a little later, but that's for my next book, one of the sexy stories that we have. But what is the EB-5? You can buy a green card. This is a gentleman or a gentlelady's approach to permanent residence. There are three kinds of EB-5s. All right. The first one will cost you $1,050,000. You have to put 10 people to work in a place of business. If you have 9, the case is dead. If it's not a new enterprise, the case won't even have a pulse. You have to start a new business. Mm-hmm. Anywhere in the United States and have 10 people. EB-5s are now taking over 3 years to get done. So you still need to have a temporary visa that would allow you to remain in America. The green card you're going to get, they don't trust marriages. They don't trust EB-5s. You're only going to get a conditional green card, good for 2 years, requiring you to file a petition to remove the conditions to the green card to get a full green card. So the I-526 is the form that we file to try to get a green card for somebody who puts in $1,050,000 into an enterprise. The I-829 is the form that we file 90 days before the expiration of the 2 years. And we generally pivot with our clients and we're in touch with them 6 months before so we can line everything up so that on that 89th day, the government receipts in the application to remove the conditions to the green card. The second EB-5 is you put $800,000 and 10 people to work in rural areas or where unemployment is very high. So you can imagine you start a restaurant anywhere in the country, you're putting $1,050,000. You start a restaurant in Goshen or Albany or God knows where in the outskirts of the diaspora of civilization, you can put $800,000. You still have to put 10 people to work. Now, how many people would like to really own a Dunkin' Donuts in the middle of obscurity? Not too many people, but it's on the books. The first and the second methods of getting green cards, again, have great opportunity to people that are proprietorial. What does that mean, Hannes? There are a lot of people that would rather put a lot of money into themselves than into the third method of getting the EB-5, and that is a regional center, not an opportunity zone, but a regional center. There are about 900 certified regional centers that the United States government has pre-certified. They portend employment. Here, the one advantage is you have to put in 800K like the other one, but you're not responsible for the employment. I'm going to give you a perfect example of what worked for our clients. Years ago, the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, where the New York Nets used to be the New Jersey Nets, a basketball team, a play, was an EB-5 regional center. The governor wanted it. The mayor wanted it. Everybody in Brooklyn was excited. 10 guys selling beer, and that gentleman from Germany would get a green card. 10 guys selling popcorn and a lady from Afghanistan can get a green card. This is used as bridge loan financing. The government has formulas for these major projects. Or if you have a little shopping pad and it's got 10 stores and the stores are big enough to hold more than 10 people for each one, then you'll get a certain allocation.
They get $10 million in free money, basically.
That's right. And it's, you know, obviously, are the people with the accents that are coming into our office are doing this in order to get a green card. Mm-hmm. The people that are doing this, who are the real estate developers, are looking for this financing to come in. And they don't care about the green card. And that's why you have to be very careful on the ethics here of a lawyer. There was a lot of fraud. A lot of immigration lawyers were taking kickbacks and money from the regional centers if they found clients for them to make investments. You want to make sure you have an immigration lawyer, not a corporate lawyer that's expert on regional centers. But then you want your immigration lawyer to be able to look over the shoulder of all these corporate lawyers and make sure that the regional center stands in full compliance. And the more important thing, whether you do any one of these three EB-5s, and it's critical, you want to make sure that you're with a regional center if you're going to do the third one that has removed the conditions of the green card for all the projects they've ever had in their history. In their rear view mirror, they have nobody left behind. It's no point if they build a project, you get that conditional green card good for 2 years, and then the thing goes belly up. Now, there are all kinds of nuances. On some of the regional centers, you'll get a 1% investment money annually. And some of them, you can pull your money out so long as it's held in escrow, but those projects weren't wonderful. There were also national security, there were national interest regional centers where individuals were able to do this in areas that the government targeted as really in our national interest. There was a horse racing. We used to warn our clients, it's horse racing. You're betting on the wrong horse and you may not get your money back, or you may not get the green card. And the beautiful thing about the regional center, the third EB-5, you're supposed to get your money back 5 or 6 years later. So you're going to lose the money that the regional center charges you. It could be substantial. And the legal fee for the immigration law firm, but you get your money back. And the first two, where you're putting $1,050,000 and 10 people to work anywhere in the nation, or the 800 and the 10 people, you don't get your money back. With the regional center, you're supposed to get all of your money back. So you have to be very careful that the regional center is standing. Some of them have multiple projects, so they can easily pivot the funds from one regional center to another regional center. And it's very important that you do your research, that your law firm is not tied to a particular regional center. We've done this for some of the finest families of our time. You can see on our website, the kind of work that we represent. I represent Melania Trump. I happen to be a very proud Democrat, so I'm like this with her husband's politics. But I did Miss Universe, and I did Trump Models, and I represent her, and she is a dear friend, despite the difference in our politics. I was invited recently to the funeral of her mom. I had gotten her parents their citizenship, her sister a green card, and all sorts of other things. I represent Mike Tyson, Dolly Parton, Kwaku Mandela, who's Nelson Mandela's grandson, Elvis Presley's granddaughter, Riley Keough, and her husband. We have Boy George, John George. He's a chef, by the way, John George.
Yeah.
We've had the good fortune to represent many, many people in their pursuits of visas, green cards, citizenship, and as well as their staff and their loved ones. It's so important that you find a lawyer, particularly in the EB-5 space, who stays in their lane and has a lot of experience. And you can always call a person like me for a reference. Even if you don't use our office, we want to make sure that you stay in capable hands. Most capably are lawyers that are associated with the American Immigration Lawyers Association. My father was president of that organization in 1970. In those days, it was the American Immigration and Nationality Lawyers. But the acronym ANAL didn't really go over well nationally, so they changed the name of the company. In any event, Hannes, that is the matrix of getting green cards. And it can take a long time to get the green card now, 3+ years, and to remove the conditions. And if you don't do a good job, the government can deny cases and they can put you in removal proceedings. And we're litigating some cases now where people actually put money, they invested it, it went belly up, and the government now wants to deport them. And we're trying to make the case that they did what they were supposed to do. It wasn't their fault that the company went belly up and so forth. So just keep in mind, if you do the regional center, you can lose the green card and you can lose your money. So you may want to have other ways of getting green cards concurrent with the measures that you're taking with the investment basis of getting a green card. But that's the investment side of it. It's a gentleman or a gentle lady's way. I remember sitting with a gentleman whose daughter was an actor, and she was terrible, awful. Another gentleman I sat with, his son was a chef. He was awful. And the father confided in me, what do I do? I said, buy him, and for the actor, buy her a green card. He goes, why? I said, because you don't want them listing around in the wrong employers. An actor or a model in the wrong hands could be taken advantage of. Buy them the green card so that they can now have their own independence to work for who they want to or they don't want to. That's what a parent ought to do. And so forth. And you get the money back if you do it properly. So that is that path. If you'd like, I'm happy to go into the other ones too.
Yeah, sure. And actually what you just mentioned is that you are master of your own fate is so important. Like it's one thing to get into the country, but it's also another to live here and be tied to, for example, a really bad company that might not have best ethics or does not have your best interest at heart. Or there's also a nuance where there's some companies who are very aware that you cannot leave easily and they give you lesser pay or, you know, they know that you're tied to them.
You know, the greatest risk takers and entrepreneurs are foreign nationals. Our founding documents and parents contemplated that. So why not own that space? Why not be a person who manages your own fate? It's so impressive and so important. So let's talk about the family basis. Excuse me. Much like a conditional green card that you get through the EB-5, if you marry an American citizen, you also get a green card that's temporary in nature. Now, this is where the good news is. If they lose your papers, and it takes forever for them to get you the green card, and you're married more than 2 years by the time the green card will be awarded, you'll get a full green card. Now, a full green card is only good for 10 years. You got to keep renewing the card every 10 years. Your visual, your image changes, and so forth. But that's, again, a very important step. If you marry an American citizen, again, you get a conditional green card. You can apply for the green card. And there are generally four different matrix or four different ways to onboard into the system. First, you can do a K-1 visa. If the person's abroad, they're an important chef in their space, and you're engaged, and you don't want to come to America right away, you can physically apply at the American embassy. They take longer now post-COVID because embassies are backed up, and with the winds of war in Europe and the Middle East, all embassies now are absorbing nationals of other countries. You then have to marry once you get the K-1 visa within 90 days of your entry to the United States. And the K-1 is very nuanced. You have to have seen each other physically in person, and you want to make sure that you really want to do that. I'm not recommending K-1s. I generally recommend people get married and get on with the green card, unless there is a hesitation for financial reasons, or you have a wonderful job, you're in a Michelin star restaurant in Europe, and you don't really want to leave until a certain time over a year and so forth. But those things are, that's the first way. You can also marry the foreign national, you can marry an American citizen, and you can do a K-3 visa, which is permission to enter, married to a citizen, to apply for a green card. Both the K-1 and the K-3 are very genuine applications, backed up at embassies, but again, the right path. The third way is just get married abroad, someplace out of America. and file the I-130, file for the green card at the American Embassy, at the post. Wait till you're called. It could take a year to 2 years. And you do your green card. You generally have 6 months after the green card is awarded in order to make an entry into the United States. The fourth one, and by the way, the third one, if you apply for a green card, then the question is, can you come intermittently to America on your ESTA if you're one of those coveted countries that gets a 90-day entrance? Here, you have to be transparent at the point of entry to the border, where you have to say, I'm coming in for a brief, innocent, and casual visit. I have a green card pending. I intend on coming and leaving. Is it okay? And they generally will treat you respectfully if you're not abusing the visa waiver, and depending on the nationality that you have. The fourth way is a little more sophisticated. If you come into America, you have to wait 90 days before you can apply for a green card or get married. The government would argue, if you sat down for an interview domestically in America, that you may have had a preconceived intention when you came here to marry and get a green card, and therefore you committed visa fraud on your ESTA or on your entry on the B1, B2 visitor's visa. Now, that 90-day rule really works in the Foreign Affairs Manual for cases abroad at the American embassies. But lawyers have extrapolated to respect its terms domestically in the United States. They have every right to go through your telephone and ask questions, your social media. And if they see that you're coming to America to get married and start the rest of your life, and you came in on an ESTA, that you may have had a preconceived intent, lending the narrative for a visa fraud. You have to make sure you get good advice and that the medical examination and all the parts for a marriage case that we as practitioners have to present are dated commensurate with that 90-day rule and so forth. You never marry the wrong person for the right papers. I can't tell you how important this. I'm a survivor of a 34-year almost marriage. Myself, four kids, all married, five grandchildren, two on the way with God's grace. I can't tell you how important it is for you to realize you get a mother-in-law and all the parts that come with it. And you ought to really be vested in the happiness of that loved one and they with you. And something bad can get worse. If this was not the right person for you to marry and you did it and you accelerated it just for immigration, you've now added an albatross around your neck and you may end up making more complications for you. But the green card you get is only good for 2 years. The government has another look back. Sometimes they waive the interviews if you do the case domestically. And by the way, everything said and done, I prefer to do the cases domestically in America because we go to the interview. We have control. There are appeals if there's problems. At the American Embassy is the K-1, the K-3, the I-130, the three that I suggested. There's no right to counsel. It's a very chauvinist approach. But the government says, yes, you have the right to attorneys, but not at America's embassies once you leave U.S. soil. The hell with democracy. And it's a real problem dealing with these embassies sometimes. A domestic case, it can work. You then have to file a removal of the conditions to the green card. And I offboard my marriage cases when they get that temporary green card in such a fashion that I prepare them for the next station and afterwards for citizenship. And generally, an immigration lawyer is getting you a temporary green card, a full green card, U.S. citizenship, and then a passport. And I make sure that after they do the different stages, they have files that they maintain at home so they're prepared for the next one and they're not caught off guard, because they'll be very upset to get citizenship 3 years later, because you can get it 3 years rather than 5 years if you're married to a citizen. You have to track your physical presence in and out of America. Homeland Security also has the right to look to see that you are a person of good moral character, that you're truthful about where you go, why you went, and your taxes are being paid and so forth. But the path into the system, the clients that come to us with visas and business interests sometimes happens because of people that they love or love that finds them along the way while they're in America. I'm also a mayor in New Jersey where I live, so I get to marry people. And when they come in to City Hall for me to marry them and they have the label on the suit jacket, that shows me that they may be returning the jacket after they take the picture at the mayor, and that they're only in it for the phony marriage. So law firms of repute, I take pictures of couples on my Zoom. I ask questions of them. I do not onboard a marriage case unless I've spoken to both people, seen them on a Zoom or in person where I can.
Yeah.
We haven't lost a marriage case for that reason.
Yeah. It's the proof is in the pudding. You know, you have to make sure you have a genuine case. Otherwise, it just falls apart in the process.
Hannes, when I have two clients and they come in to see me and they have two toothbrushes lined up in their bathroom because they're living with each other and they don't want to get married on principle and they want to get a green card based employment. And I tell them, here's the fee for a marriage case. Here's the fee for employment. All of a sudden, the toothbrush looks a lot better to them. Or people were living with each other for so long. And then when they get married, they actually kill a good thing. And it brings out conversations like prenuptial agreements and all the other things that people have to be worried about. And I like prenuptial agreements because it shows immigration that a person went in thoughtfully. They each have a lawyer and they exercise the document. So it could get complicated. And everything is great in a marriage until one party starts throwing the dishes at the other party. And then you have to look at this carefully because who do you represent as the lawyer? The person who threw the dish or the person who got smacked in the head with it? You represent both, actually, and you have to be careful to make sure that you advance the interests of the couple as a couple to the authorities. But we have a robust family group that accompanies the business visas for that reason, because love finds itself differently. During COVID, people wanted to kill each other when they were living with each other at long strides. And then other people found love because of those opportunities. And we have had some really wonderful cases in our office through the years, not just royalty throughout Europe, but people with different age and cultural disparities, which is an amazing to see with the winds of war in the Middle East, Jews married to Palestinians and people who are married to people who are 20 or 30 years older than them, and the government testing their mettle and us pushing back with the substance and the proof. And here the where the EB-5, you need to prove that you, and I forgot to explain this, to do the EB-5, by the way, you need to show the source of the funds, where you got the money from, and that the EB-5 center qualifies. Often the EB-5 cases could be this thick. Half of it is the source of where the person got the money, and then that the regional center qualifies. Here with a marriage, you also have to prove the substance. Otherwise, you're not getting that temporary and ultimately removing the conditions and getting the full green card. If they go to doctor's appointments, I want to show the doctor that they listed each other in case of emergencies. The husband is picking up the wife's dresses. The dress is being picked up by the husband. Or if you have two husbands and two wives, because everything is modern these days, that they travel together. They sit next to each other in airplanes, the boarding passes, that they filed their tax returns. By the way, the boarding passes also, they keep in that other folder to show their physical presence for citizenship purposes. And I have couples keep that separately as well. So we have to do a good job as immigration lawyers, whichever way you apply for permanent residence, in painting the picture that you're eligible. You're going to put $1,050,000 into a business. You're going to put $800,000 into a regional center in EB-5. We're going to have to prove where that money came from, that it was legitimate, and there may be tax consequences to those conveyances. You're marrying somebody. We're going to want to show the government. You met online. It used to be they met in a bar. These days, they met by swiping. Well, do you still have a copy of the first time you encountered each other? Yes. We went out to dinner with so-and-so. It's on our social media and our Instagram. The government will data mine and will easily find a lot of the content. And it's very important for us to kind of corral all of that. There are other ways of securing permanent residence. Some are also more provocative. If you come from a country that you actually have a fear of going back to, you could apply for political asylum. If you're placed into removal proceedings, you'll have another bite at the apple, even if you lose the political asylum, before an immigration court to renew your application. And there you have other remedies, including the Convention Against Torture and other UN-supported remedies. Or you can apply for the visa lottery. There are 55,000 green cards a year that are regaled and provided for individuals from countries where we're underrepresented by green card application, with an eye towards getting that mixture, if you would. The main ingredients for the chefs watching this is to select the right solution for you. We have clients all the time selecting maybe one or two. There's no prohibition, so long as the visa you have allows for a dual intent, applying for multiple methods at the same time. You could put an EB-5 in, and you could have an employer do a perm or a conventional green card case. You can marry an American citizen and have a green card case to the Labor Department or an EB-5 cooking, but the government's going to look suspiciously if you don't really love the person that you're with, and so forth. But the thesis is very simple. There are so many governing ways of getting permanent residence, particularly for long-term UN workers and other methods as well.
Yeah, as long as both of those ways are legitimate, like we can be in a genuine marriage and have genuine employment, and both of them could the cause forward to get a green card.
It's not necessary to have both. At a certain stage, the applications mirror one another when you adjust your status. But we don't withdraw cases because sometimes marriages go up and the person at least has the ability to be here. Either way, a good immigration lawyer is going to want to keep your visa in place so that if the green card doesn't work, if the marriage doesn't sustain itself, at least you have a visa, a belt and suspenders, so nothing falls down.
Definitely sounds something where you want to have proper legal counsel and a good team in your corner.
Yep.
So when you earlier mentioned that the government have every right to go through your phone up on entry too, right? This is actually something that happened to me the very first time I came on a J-1 visa. The officer at the border took my phone from me and went through it. And I wasn't even sure if that's legal or not.
You have no expectation of privacy at an airport. If you want to come to America and you're going to go through an airport under the rubric of security, they have every right. And then they have the right to see whether or not you're consistent. I have beautiful models that come into America and they go through their suitcases. And if they see matchbooks from parlors where they're waiting on tables selling vodka and they're supposed to be a model, they'll call the place up and they'll investigate. The government is doing a good job of protecting its homeland, and you have to be careful. If you take your social media down, they're going to want to know why you took it down. If your emails are empty, they're going to want to know what you're hiding. If you tell the truth, you can be screwed. If you lie, you're definitely screwed. You have to be smart about the way you handle circumstance.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm married to an American citizen, but I have no intention of living permanently into America, is how I train a lot of my foreign students when they're traveling.
Like if a chef, for example, comes for a trial and he might do that on a Nesta, on a visa waiver, and they find chef knives or some chef clothing in the suitcase, you know, that might be an issue, right?
I have it. We represent Lincoln Center, a beautiful performing arts center in Manhattan. Somebody comes in with their favorite tuba. It doesn't matter if they're volunteering for a charity. Their use of their tuba, even if they're not being paid, is a breach of immigration law. You bring in your chef's hat and your knives with you. Yes. You're portending a business narrative. And you can't say, I'm looking for a job and then I'm leaving, because that is not contemplated with an ESTA if you're trying to supplant the permanent narrative or job in America. You have to be very smart. Buy your chef's knives here and throw them out before you leave, or ship them back to Germany or your home country. The critical thing is that you're consistent with the narratives that you're placing to the government. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Why are you saying shipping them back? Like, I don't ever remember anybody checking my bags, flying back home.
Flying out is never a problem.
Yeah.
But again, I have clients that will ship their equipment back and forth so they don't have to worry about being stopped with it and having to explain things. Whatever the equipment is, a piano, a tuba, or chef's knife.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's look at the employment ledger. We've discussed the family. We've discussed the investment. The employment has multiple tiers. You could be doing something in the national interest. And if it is, and we can coin it, and it's related to being a chef or in the food industry, we're going to make the case. You can also be doing something extraordinary. We talked last time about those O visas, the individuals of extraordinary ability. The EB1, which is the employment-based first preference, contains individuals that are extraordinary. The government has recognized you hit 3 out of 6 or 3 out of 8 standards for an O visa. Now, can you hit 3 out of 10? And even if you hit 3 out of the 10, can you surmount the Kazarian, a famous case, the totality of circumstances? In the totality of circumstances, you're one of a handful of people in that space. The EB1 is a wonderful visa because you can apply for a green card independently of an employer. You can self-petition. So if you rose to a level, if you yourself have invented certain cuisines, written a cookbook, put original content, or worked and are known as one of the top chefs of our time or certain foods or industry, you're going to get the EB1.
Could that be very niche? Like if I cultivate a very odd and very niche.
Yes, but we know it when we see it. We know how much money you're making, even though it's the culinary art. You know, you still have to do well business-wise, financially. Yeah. We know when people are not really hitting it. Are they legends in their own minds, or objectively are they really important? And we spend a lot of time trying to get that narrative going. By the way, we do assessments in our office where we assess somebody for it. We don't necessarily file it. We'll take a smaller fee and do a deep dive and say, look, this is your weak spot. You're not going to surmount the Kazarian totality of circumstances because, let's face it, there's so many chefs out there that are making what you're doing and doing what you're doing. But there may be nuanced, and they may be able to surmount this and get the case. And we've succeeded in getting a lot of EB1s for very important chefs. We've gotten them for tattoo artists, believe it or not, and scores of scholars and creative directors, and you name the industry, we've been doing it. I did it for chief rabbis and all sorts of very important people in their own space. The EB1 is a wonderful visa, and we know it very handsomely. I have a whole group that surrounds that effort, and we know what buttons. You have to show that you've spoken at conferences or you're part of a group that is very hard to get to. You've won awards and prizes of national or international renown and so forth. If you've participated in a lot of these television programs as the best chefs across Europe, there's also ways to be regaled in that space also. The conventional way of getting a green card through employment is called a labor certification. That's where the employer does a little bit of a waltz with the labor department, and they run ads in the newspaper looking for an American who can fill this job. You can only set modest requirements. It's called a PERM, capital P-E-R-M. It's an acronym for an online protocol that you do with the labor department, where America's restaurants and companies and hospitality groups are running ads in newspapers and showing the requirements that they have for a job. When they show that there's nobody out there and they've danced this little waltz and running ads and on Sundays and so forth, and the resumes come back, and they don't find the right people. And we know all the tricks in the trade. There's no bonuses. There's no smoking. There's no raises.
You make it as unattractive as possible.
You can do a live-in chef. Person has a home in Manhattan, one in the Hamptons, and they want somebody to live in the Hamptons. They're running the ads out in a newspaper that's more obscure. And you tell people, we want you to live in our house. Nobody wants to do that. But you have to then show a social calendar that needs a chef, that you have enough food and needs, and you have other employees doing the cooking and the cleaning, and maybe this is the head of your pantry, or this is the baker, or the soda maker, whatever it is that you're doing. We've done these in the commercial sense, and we've done these in the residential sense. Once you have that certification from the labor department, you then file petitions with immigration, and then you can go into the system and get a green card. All along, whether you're doing the EB-5, where you're making the investment, or the labor certification, conventional green card, you must have a visa that allows you to be here. or you can do the EB-5 and the labor certification while you're outside of America. There's some people who come to me and say, I got a great job, but I want to come to America. I convince them to do a green card. Put your trip off for 3 years. You're 27 years young. You're not extraordinary. There are a gazillion chefs out there. Do you have a restaurant, a company, a family that would be willing to sponsor you? Let's do a labor certification. In 3 years' time, you'll be 30 years old. You'll come in with a full green card to work for that family and work for anyone. Mind you, I want you to work for the company that sponsored you. Critical. Now, there are certain rules that allow you to pivot to other employers, but when you're going to apply for citizenship down the road, a good moral character is becoming a citizen. They're going to want to know, did you go home with the girl you brought to the dance? Did you go back? Did you work for the person that sponsored you for a green card? And if you didn't, you may be accused of fraud. They may come after your green card. If you did for the requisite time and you can prove it, you'll be in good stead.
Yeah. I think this is a good nuance to put out there. One of the things that in my immigration was mentioned that my green card is not a right, it's a privilege. So it can be taken from me at any time.
If you committed fraud,
yeah,
or you just did it as a friend, you know, you married somebody, hang on, you marry somebody for the right papers, but that person has a relationship and they're traveling with their boyfriend or girlfriend, and the government picks up trips that they're taking, they're going to dun you that your spouse was traveling with somebody who wasn't their brother, their mother, their sister, or you, and they can dun you. There's all kinds of fraud. You have to be very careful. And for anybody who has adverse criminal history in their background, you have to also be careful that this is handled judiciously and openly. And more importantly, we know that these things can change over time. When we do a labor certification, somebody says they have X amount of requirements. Sorry, you can't require Chinese or Japanese language. The business language of food in America is English. You also have to you say you have 2 years experience someplace, and therefore this employer wants to sponsor you. Good. We want the job showing that you have that 2 years experience now. We want that letter now. I don't want to chase you 2 years down the road and say, oh, I really didn't have it. Or the company that's going to sponsor you has to be in the green. Unless you have a visa that allows you to work for that person and the taxes go up and down, then you're okay with immigration. But if the employer goes into the red and doesn't maintain their numbers, you can lose that green card case any one time. So I will warn, and I will want to get the tax returns of a company earlier before later. So there's a lot of fraud and a lot of vetting that we do all the time with clients, particularly with marriages, to make sure they're real. And when they start to fall apart, you have to be honest with people. With the EB-5, if they don't have good source funds, we had a Chinese cop. How did you make your money? I used to get bribes. Sorry, fella, we can't do this. Certain countries, they don't take tax returns. So I had to show how he made money and he sold money because he had Chagall paintings and all kinds of stuff. You can be creative. But creative and lying is a very fine line.
How important is it, like, let's say the marriage does fall apart within the 2 year condition, but maybe you can prove that there's domestic violence or something, there's a legit reason. Right. Is there a chance for that person to stay in the United States?
Yes. The government does not want you to stay with the wrong person for the right papers, and they allow you to file a petition to remove the conditions independently of the relationship if it's abusive. At any point, if you're married to a citizen, and you suffer, sadly, physical or verbal or emotional abuse, we already tell clients to go get advice. First, the lawyer is invalidated from helping you because the lawyer was sworn to help both of you. So you need to get your own lawyer. A lot of these lawyers, a lot of these individuals will come to us, and then we represent only one party. And you can put in a Violence Against Women Act case, even for males. The VAWA claim, as it's known, is something of a great nuance, and the government goes to great lengths to protect you. But you need to prove it. Did you call the police? Do you have a police report? Are there pictures of a bruise? Or if he's abusing you or she's abusing you, and texting pictures of you with somebody else and all kinds of abusive stuff, we need proof of it. I hate to end on that note.
I was just about to say, well, Michael, thank you so much for your time. Just one final question. Where is the ballpark figure for kind of getting a green card service with a lawyer so people have an idea where that lies?
So be very careful of these one-man shows or one-woman shows where they do a third of the price, because they really don't have the capacity to bring in work and get it done unless they have a good reputation and staff. Mm-hmm. We have over 400 reviews on Google. Fees are project-based in our space. Visas and green cards can run anywhere between 10 grand and 20 grand in the employment vector. In the family place, between 5 grand and 10 grand, plus filing fees and so forth. I always meet clients comfortably where they can afford and give them payment plans. I'm in it for the relationships, not just for the money. But at the same time, I don't do free consultations. I'll credit the consultation fee to the case, but I know people go shopping all the time, and you want a quality lawyer. I teach in a law school. I've written a book on the subject. My father started the firm, and my son is a lawyer in the practice. So I'm vested on keeping a good name, and your reputation and your ethics is everything these days.
Yeah, I think that speaks for you and the firm and the longevity of it, and you know, hopefully the legacy that your son gets to carry forward.
Thank you, Hannes, and I appreciate you and your talent and your audience, and I would be honored if I could be of any service. I can be reached on my mobile, which is 347-203-6355, by WhatsApp or text. My email is Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, at Wilds Law, my last name and the word law, WILDESLAW.com. Again, my father started our practice on 53rd and Madison. We're still in the same building 65 years later.
Wow, that's a legacy.
Yeah, in Miami also, right now in Denver, with by appointment only in Tel Aviv and Los Angeles, and also in New Jersey, in Englewood, where I happen to be the mayor.
Thank you for joining us at the Private Chef Podcast. If you know any highly skilled chefs that want to take their life to the next level, make sure to share this podcast with them. And if you enjoyed this episode, click subscribe and check out our upcoming episodes. Thank you for listening.